What's up, everybody? Happy Wednesday. Welcome to the Pick Six Podcast. I'm Will Brinson. I'm your host. This is CBS Sports' daily NFL podcast. Once a day, every day, Monday through Friday, for all of eternity. It will never end. I enjoy doing it. It's fun. I get to talk to my friends like Jason Lockenfora, CBS Sports NFL Insider. What's up, man?
What's going on, dude? Hey, I meant to ask you this. I was going to say off camera, but whatever. I don't know. Pre-recording.
Off air.
But in your new profile picture on Twitter, which I'm assuming was taken during the probably early in the Patriots Chargers game, Are you in fact wearing loafers?
I will tell you in 1 second. You know what I think they are? I think they're actually.
They were loafers.
I think they're. No, you can't see my shoes.
You could barely tell, but I just had a loafer vibe. I'm wearing. I don't think he's wearing tennis shoes or trainers or running shoes or whatever people call them in your neck of the woods. They look like what I would refer to as dress shoes.
My mother-in-law bought me some for Christmas. Bought me some Amazon Basics men's slippers. And they sort of, I've worn them out. Like, I've worn them in the car because I've been running to the car and I'm like, crap, I forgot to change out of these. Like,
I wear slippers in the car all the time to pick my kids up and stuff. I don't care.
No, but I wear them to like the grocery store and I wore them to like 99.9, the local radius.
That's ambitious.
Yeah, I mean, you can't really tell the difference and they're really comfortable and really warm. So I just pushed the limits with them and I'm pretty sure I was wearing those.
You were wearing those.
The Twitter picture was actually taken, during the Ravens Chargers game. That's why I don't look completely distraught. But that game, the Patriots Chargers game, man. And we can dive right into the games, and we'll come back and we'll talk about Kyler Murray and Antonio Brown because I'm curious what you thought about it. I mean, to me, it all came down to coaching, and the Patriots just outcoached the Chargers, and the Chargers coaches acted
they
like
they beat the. Oh, I almost cussed. They have to beat the snot out of them, though.
Sean cussed.
It was the reverse of the Ravens game. I mean, what the Chargers did to the Ravens conceptually, schematically, and physically is exactly, to a large degree, what New England did to them. New England made the adjustments the Ravens never did. They went heavy. They road-graded them. They ran right at Bosa. They wham-blocked people. They played with physicality and with purpose, and they attacked those ends in a way that the Ravens refused to with jumbo packages and heavy personnel, and they screened them to death, which the Ravens refused to do. They used tight ends in the power run game, and they set things up off of that, and they really didn't have to take any deep shots or prove how cute they were because they just mauled them. It's, again, the Chargers D-line, everything they did to the Ravens, they had done back to them by the Patriots. And just like Marty Mortingweg, who his final game coaching the Ravens was that debacle, just like how he was incredibly stubborn and or stupid and refused to budge, boy, Gus Bradley, man, you'd think at 35-7 he might have been like, even if we don't love our linebackers without Perryman and with a couple guys dinged up, I'm not going to let them just run through my seven defensive backs like they have been. Like, I'm going to adjust personnel, but nope.
Yeah.
Nope. Live by the sword, die by the sword.
So the Chargers had the Patriots had one pass attempt over 20 yards down the field. And I think in that same vein, what was really frustrating if you were rooting for the Chargers, as I was, the Chargers had 9 attempts 20 yards or more down the field. I get you're playing catch up, but to me, so much of what Los Angeles did was designed against a team that was playing cover two, or like they weren't changing what they did offensively.
Well, no, but the problem was Belichick took Wink Martindale's blitzes and said, yeah, you know, they lost that game, but boy, they beat the crap out of Rivers in LA by blitzing him. And you know what? They still did a pretty good job of moving him off the spot. It was a lot of field goals and not touchdowns, right?
Yeah.
So we're going to do that. And they dialed it up, and you would think the Chargers would have tried to screen them to death, but they didn't. They were going for 5 and 7 step drops against what is the strength of that Patriots team, the secondary.
Yeah, it was wild.
It was bizarre, man. It was bizarre.
By the way, great stat. I don't know if I mentioned this previously on the podcast. If I did, I apologize. But via Scott Van Pelt on his SportsCenter show, Tom Brady, 20 of 24 for 261 yards and a touchdown against seven defensive backs in the first half. Do something, guys. I mean, like, what was really infuriating was the Chargers then, like, they at least had, like, 30 minutes or 20 minutes or whatever to go into halftime and say, okay.
No, that's what I said, 35-7. You'd think they would have been stubborn enough. That's why if I'm John Harbaugh watching that game, I'd be fuming, because what that told you was if the Ravens carry four tight ends, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? And the Ravens use tackle eligible a fair amount. They just didn't in that game. Like, he had to be sitting there saying, my God, if we would have adjusted, they would have never got out of it. You know what I mean? Like, if we would have just tried to out-muscle them and, like, got all our beef on the field and ran at Bosa, this dude would have stuck with seven DBs no matter what. Like, yep. We would try to force them out of that in their base, and even if we're winning, they were going to keep that as their base because that's just how they were going to go down. Like, it had to be doubly infuriating for, you know, what was left, Greg Roman and John Harbaugh.
Yeah. And like, if you listen to what people, there was an article on, by Robert Mays on The Ringer, and, guys, the Rams running back coach is, I'm drawing a blank on his name, but I'll tell you in a second. But anyway, he's like, look, our goal is, you know, we come out in this, 11 personnel, and the goal is to get you out of your base defense as fast as possible. And it works every time.
We want to force you to change your base and dictate to you now what personnel groupings we want. And the Ravens never even tried to force them out of it. And New England did everything they possibly could to force them out of them. They just refused to relent and get out of it. And again, I do think
Aaron Kramer, by the way. Sorry, Aaron Kramer.
Yeah, part of it was the deficiencies of their line. As much as we talked about the injuries and guys who were out, and is Gordon going to play, and how effective will he be, and Eckler and these guys, the loss of Perriman was huge. They had a rookie linebacker who was starting for them the first 4 or 5 weeks on the weak side, who they lost for the year, and they never really found replacements. So it's not so much, you know, that it was just them saying, 90-90 boo-boo, we figured out the smartest thing in the world. It was somewhat dictated by situations. But at some point, you've got to put different personnel on the field and at least try to switch it up. And they never did. And the other thing about, if you're going to have seven DBs on the field and it's going to be about speed and twitchiness, then – dude, you at some point were they never like, let's bring numbers?
Yeah.
Let's blitz three of those seven, you know, for bleeps and giggles, and maybe we'll make this dude get off the spot, because we're not getting home with four because it's four against six because they're max protecting, you know what I mean? And Gronk's blocking, like, basically Gronk blocked so well, he was like an extra tackle. And then sometimes they did have an extra tackle in there. And it seemed to me like Devlin was in on every snap. Did it not seem that way to you?
Yep.
So, you know, two tight ends and a fullback on the field all the time against seven DBs. Well, maybe we better just try to blitz them then.
Yeah, it was just coaching 101. And that's what I missed on all my picks last week because I got too cute and I like these trendy underdogs. But the reality is that the better coaches, excuse me, and the better quarterbacks won. How do you think this translates for the Patriots to the Chiefs? Because if they try and pull the cover zero blitz everybody at Patrick Mahomes. I mean, I get that he's never seen that full force, but Andy Reid will just screen the hell out of him.
No, look, it's horses for courses. They don't. I mean, Mahomes is going to be about containing. I think it'll be a four-man rush. You know, sometimes almost like a might even be a three. And they're not even really rushing. It's like a must rush to just contain him. You know what I mean? Just keep him in the pocket. It's going to be about not letting him do all the stuff on the run. I mean, the reason you could unload your arsenal against Rivers is he can't move. You know what I mean? Like, there is no worry that he's going to slide step and then run for 30 yards or slide step, get out, you know, run to the opposite hash mark, throw across his body 65 yards the other way before we can get there. That is very much the worry with this guy. So I think from a defensive standpoint, the Patriots completely reinvent themselves. And, I mean, dude, it wouldn't shock me if the Patriots have seven DBs out there sometimes. Like, wouldn't shock me. The other side of it, I do think some of the stuff the Patriots did in the run game last week reminded me of some of the stuff that the Ravens have been doing recently. And I think you can run on Kansas City's ends a little bit the way they ran on the Chargers ends. So I don't know. I would think D Ford is going to see a whole lot of Rob Gronkowski and assorted bulky males trying to systematically plow through him for four quarters. I do think some of that stuff will work the same. Now, Jones in the middle is a completely different scenario, and he's going to blow things up in the run game that the Chargers just weren't able to. You know, some of those dives and some of those draws that went right up the A-gap and you know, allowed the Patriots to find some joy that way. I'm not sure if that stuff will be there. But I do think that ball control, you know, approach the first couple of drives where it was about long, you know, prolonged drives. And I do think that death by a thousand paper cuts mentality, you know, I think that's where Josh will be. I think that's where his headspace will be calling that game. You know what I mean? And that it may not be another one with a whole lot of deep shots. That may not be what they need, you know. Might not be how they roll, even though the Chiefs have given up a lot of big plays. It may be a situation where they exert their will and Brady is absolutely methodically cunning, you know, from 5 to 25 yards, and they hold on to the ball and they have these 15-play drives and they frustrate Mahomes a little bit, and, you know, that might be the way to go.
Mm. How much do you think the weather factors into this? There's some fun meteorological terms that are coming out. There's a
tundra is involved in it, right?
A what?
Tundra blast or something like that?
Arctic blast. Arctic blast could I saw one guy for, I think it's like weathermodels.com, is projecting the Arctic blast. I mean, it sounds ridiculous, but it's like, it's almost like Independence Day or like some science fiction movie. But it's like,
right,
going to be centered over Arrowhead Stadium on Sunday night. There's like torching. I mean, it's conjured up by Bill Belichick, of course. Also, I don't know if you know this. This is even more exciting. Sunday night's AFC Championship game between the Pats and the Chiefs is going to coincide with a total lunar eclipse. It is called a super blood wolf moon, and the eclipse will take place during the first super moon of 2019, 8:36 p.m. Central Time, which will be like, I mean, right about halftime, I guess.
Yeah.
So that should be pretty exciting. Or maybe second half, I guess, because it's scheduled for 5:40 p.m. Central.
Yeah.
But that's, that's kind of, how much do you think? I don't think the Super Blood Wolf Moon, which would be a good name of a band, I don't think that's going to matter too much. But this Arctic blast and cold temperatures, it has to favor the Patriots, right?
I guess. I mean, they've have more experience in playing January football, I guess, than a lot of the Chiefs do, and experience with the extreme cold. At this point, I'm just like waiting for like ice balls to be falling from the sky, or like frozen daggers of ice just dropping like right from above. Is that possible? Is that in
sure.
that nobody has predicted that?
From the wolf moon. From ice from daggers the from the wolf.
I mean, they're wearing helmets. They'll be fine.
Yeah. Yeah. They can't get killed by that, I wouldn't think, unless they're like dropped from really far away.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I mean, what are they talking temperature? Like, what does the Arctic blast mean? Does that imply wind, or it just means like crazy cold temperatures?
I think just crazy cold temperatures. The guy I saw, the weather models guy, said he would put the over under right now if he had to guess. For the temperature, kickoff temperature at 4.5 degrees.
Wow.
Yeah, it's cold. By the way, I looked it up. The Patriots, I don't understand how this is possible. The Patriots have only played one playoff game at under 10 degrees. I feel like when I looked it up, I thought it was going to say like 25 games.
Under 10? I mean, dude, under 10.
Under 10 is really cold. Don't get me wrong. But
that's pretty cold. Like, that's really cold.
Yeah, it's really cold. But I'm just saying.
But I mean, how many days a year, on average, like Boston, Massachusetts, number of days a year under 10 degrees? It's not like Minnesota or Winnipeg, you know what I mean? Or like even Chicago, where you get the wind and stuff. Like, I don't know. I don't think. I mean, I went to school in Syracuse. I mean, we got a lot of.
Congrats on your
snow and stuff. I don't remember like a whole lot. I mean, it was cold. Like, it's in the 20s all the time in the teens. But like, I don't remember a whole lot of days like 7 degrees. But then again, I don't remember much about college anyway.
I don't either. By the way, so God, excuse me, I'm coughing like crazy. So 5 games since the merger at Arrowhead Stadium have been 10 degrees or below. The last one,
not that many.
No, that's not that many. That's in Kansas City. I wouldn't expect. I mean, isn't it colder in New England than Kansas City? Am I crazy?
I think Kansas City is colder than Boston.
on average?
I think, because you're like, you're on the planes, yeah, right? And do you have like the jet stream? I mean, now I'm just totally talking out of my ass. But like, I do
as
think
opposed
it would be colder
normal.
There. Like that stadium, there's not much around it. Like, Gillette's built up a little bit more around it. I just feel like there's a little bit more to break the wind, except for the open end. And you know what I mean? I don't know. It's close to the water, so doesn't that make it a little more temperate? Like, not quite as extreme?
I guess.
The coldest? I feel like I learned that. Like, it changes the air when you're that close to the water, and so it's a little more temperate. And, like, you might get different types of precipitation, but the climate itself is not as extreme. I feel like helping my daughter, like helping her BS her way through a science test, like in seventh grade last year, we were talking about stuff like that.
The record low in Massachusetts.
Don't go by record. How about the average winter temperature in Kansas City versus average winter temperature in Boston?
Temperature Boston. Let's see what it say. Wow. Okay. This is all right. So average. This is average. In December, high of 42, low of 28. It's not that cold. It's cold.
No.
January, high of
37. What about Kansas City? Okay, so that's Boston.
January, Boston, high of 37, okay. Low of 22.
All right, so write that down. 37, 22. What about Kansas City?
Kansas City is...
I bet it's colder.
39, 22 in January.
Wash.
Interesting. I just would have guessed that Kansas City was about the same as... I would have guessed Kansas City was warmer. North Carolina, by the way, Raleigh, where I live, high of 50, low of 30 for January. So, I mean, this is pretty – all right. So, in other words, this is a pretty – if we get this Arctic chill, this
cold.
Is –
cold. Yeah, this is crazy cold for anybody. Like, this is, like, the kind of cold – like, it messes with your head. You know what I mean? Like, the kind of cold where you can't put words together because you're just thinking about how cold it is, much less try to execute, you know, an NFL game plan. I mean, how many of these guys would have experience playing in four-degree weather? Like, I don't think – you know what I mean? Like,
there was a game in 2016 in Kansas City against the Titans where it was 1 degree. Week 15 matchup, the Chiefs lost 19-17 in December 18th, 2016. Before that, the lowest record post-merger, 1983, they played in a 0.5-degree game and beat the Broncos 48-17. I trust – temperatures from the 80s and in the database at Pro Football Reference, but I feel a little more confident in recent ones.
Right.
And looking at New England, if I can find this, let's see where they played in a they played the Steelers in the 2004 AFC Championship game in Pittsburgh, and it was under 10 degrees, and they won 41.
Yeah, I was at that game.
Oh, yeah, well, there you go. They won 40. You were probably working for the Post.
I covered that game for the Washington Post.
Yeah, they won 41-27 in a shootout. So do you think this Arctic blast affects the total scoring? Because the over-under's dropped 2 points.
I mean, if it's not windy, I think it does in the kicking game. I think it shortens both teams' kicking game. I mean, my experience talking to players about this over the years is, it affects special teams. The ball's, you know, hard. It's harder to throw deep balls, I guess, because the ball's so the molecules, you know what I mean, are so constricted and the ball's so cold and hard. But they shuffle in and out so many balls. I mean, I think it affects long field goals probably more than anything else. But if it's not super windy, they can still check it around enough.
Here's what the Google forecast looks like. And by the way, if you Google Kansas City weather right now, number one result, me. Nice. Yeah, if you Google Kansas,
story you wrote about the weather.
Yeah, it's hilarious.
You know how to.
Breach.
Well, I don't even know.
Breach got mad at me.
Game the system. I guess it's not technically gaming.
It's
the
not
system.
Gaming the system. I'm providing.
You know how to write strategic headlines.
Yeah, people.
Right.
Yeah, Patriots Chiefs weather forecast: colon Arctic blast could hit Kansas City. Breach is mad at me because I wrote the story, and this is probably why. But we got a big fight yesterday. Anyway, Saturday.
What do you mean he wanted to write that one? You both knew that was going to be a big, like, you knew that was going to, like, be a get a lot of numbers?
I wrote it last week for the Chiefs-Colts game, and so I was like, I sent an email saying I'd write it this week, and the Breach got mad. It's a whole long, stupid story. Anyway.
So you wanted to claim it early. Like, you wanted dibs.
Yeah, I'm updating it. I'm updating it throughout the week. Yeah.
Before you even knew if weather was really going to be an element or not.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, look, I took weather and climate twice at NC State. That's how much I like weather and climate. Also, because I did so
really?
Poorly. I did so poorly the first time.
Well, I was going to say, but then you should be the one who knows about why whether Boston or Kansas City is colder.
You would think so, but I didn't pay attention either time. I didn't.
Interesting.
Yeah. So here's the weather is snow on Saturday in Kansas City. 90% chance of precipitation right now. And we're recording this on Tuesday afternoon, so this can all change very quickly.
Yeah.
It's supposed to happen in the morning, die off in the afternoon. Sunday is supposed to be clear and cloudy with a high of 13 degrees and a low of 5 degrees. Kickoff time, we're looking at about 7 degrees in that range. Very low.
Dude, I'm not going to lie. I'm so glad that we're the late game and it's only a 22-minute pregame show.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you don't fly everybody all the way out to Kansas City for a 22-minute
show. Are you going
show,
to Kansas
City? You know what I mean?
You'd be going
if it had been the early game. We may have done the NFL Today on the road, we'd be sitting on the field at, 11 a.m. Kansas City time. Oh. That would not have been fun.
The temperature at 11 a.m. Kansas City time is supposed to be 1 degree. 10% chance of rain. Only 9 miles an hour wind. So it could be cold. I think that this favors if that's what happens. I think it favors Kansas City, but that's just me.
Yeah, I have no clue.
Yeah, I don't think anybody knows. Okay, let's. What about the other game? Chiefs.
It's going to be climate control.
Yeah, no weather. I told John he could write.
Who's
the,
writing? Let's rewrite the weather story. Let's rewrite the NFC.
He'll murder. He will. Story. If I jump into Slack right now and be like, "Hey, Breach, you can write the Saints Rams weather story," he'll be so mad. You know what is weird and says a lot about how stupid human beings are? And don't get me wrong, I'll probably write it in 2 weeks, but Super Bowl weather stories for dome Super Bowl games do really well, traffic-wise. Isn't that nuts?
What?
Yeah, people are interested in the weather of the Super Bowl weather.
Like whether they keep it at 67
no,
or
no, no,
71?
Like
I
the
mean,
weather,
it's climate control.
Like the weather outside the dome.
Oh,
yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know why.
Well, I guess when it was in that year, it was in Minnesota. I mean, I can understand why.
Or Dallas when there was all the ice and stuff like that. When it's like Houston and it's just...
Not everybody manned up and attacked the snow in Minnesota the way I did.
That's right. Yeah, you did attack the snow. Okay.
I got after that snow.
Come on, snow. All right, so Rams and Saints. I thought, again, coaching mattered to me in that game. Sean Payton had the huevos for the fake punt. Yes. All the fourth and two.
Were you surprised by it? Because I
wasn't. No. I was surprised they punted. I thought he was just going to go for it.
I was on the train, and I'm, like, watching it on my phone, and I was like, fake. You know, because you got the headphones on loud. You know what I mean? Like, I was the obnoxious guy who did, like, you know what I mean? Like, I wasn't, like, obnoxious on the phone guy. It was, like, obnoxious watching something with earbuds guy, and now you're speaking at a decibel level to yourself that wouldn't even be really acceptable as a whisper, and you're yelling it. And, like, people were looking at me like, he's saying fake news? Like, what is that guy talking about? But, like, I smelt it. Like, for Sean, the way that game was going, and, like, I'm surprised that Philadelphia didn't take the penalty. I'm not saying this Monday morning quarterback.
No.
They were suffocating them defensively. You know, I 33-yard line, 34, and knowing Taysom Hill, you know what I mean, is the personal protector who can do whatever he wants with the ball on a short snap. I was surprised that that was a surprise, if that makes sense.
No. I understand why you don't give Sean Payton an extra third down to play with, given that you have Drew Brees and all that. But if you give Sean Payton fourth and short, you are begging your team to try and stop a fourth and short. And I don't think that's what Doug Peterson wanted to do, because if he did want to do that, he would have put everybody on the line to stop the potential
fake.
Right.
I would have rushed the punt figuring, okay, well, if they snap it to the up man, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
we're going to smother him. It would have been like the equivalent of a run blitz. You know what I mean? I would have been like, all right.
I don't think that Doug Peterson got out coached or anything. I thought he did a good job. I think the Eagles were undermanned and the Nick Foles magic just kind of wore off. I thought Sean McVay outcoached Jason Garrett. So how do you think that matchup goes, McVay versus
Peyton? You know what,
Payton?
Though? He can't outclap
Jason Garrett.
If they got in a clap-a-thon, I think Jason would outlast him.
I don't know if you noticed, but over the last month, I think Jason Garrett's
he got the memo.
He's stopped clapping. Like Jerry Jones has been reading about it, or like Rich Dalrymple or somebody at the Cowboys has read about it. It's like, hey, listen.
He got the memo.
Cause they showed him walking after that first playoff win, over the Seahawks. They showed him walking back to the locker room. The camera caught him and he had one hand jammed in his pocket. And it was like, yeah. I was like, why is he jamming?
What is the sound of one hand clapping?
No, but like he had one hand in his, he had one hand in his.
He was probably clapping though. In like, can you hear that? Are you picking up that ambient sound? He was probably doing that like in his pocket.
I think he had it jammed in his pocket so he wouldn't be clapping on the way back to the locker room. So the, like, and he's been like, and he's been grinning the whole time because he knows that the camera's on him and he's not clapping. It's the whole thing's weird.
Well, he's not gonna have to worry about that for a while.
So what's the deal on him? He's getting an extension, right?
I don't know about that. I don't know about that part.
Wait,
I mean, he's got a contract for next year. I don't think he'll be fired.
You don't think he'll be fired? I feel like Jerry's about to roll out the red carpet.
I mean, he's not going to be fired, but like, I don't think he's getting a real extension.
What is Jerry Jones going to give him?
Like, could he get a rec? Remember the year Rex Ryan got an extension? Like, but it was, you know what I mean? It wasn't much guaranteed, and basically, it was just to stop people talking about him being a lame duck. I mean, Mike McCarthy got an extension. I mean, it was a 1 year. I mean, it was a faux extension. It ended up being real because he called their bluff, didn't take any of these jobs, and now they got to pay him twice as what they're paying Matt LaFleur to hang out with his high school, you know, with his kids in high school and be in Green Bay. But no, I don't think he's getting, no, I don't like what Pete Carroll just got is an extension. I don't think.
So you
that's
don't,
in the
so,
cards for Jason,
so Jason Garrett's not getting some,
I don't think he's getting 3 years, $33 million. No.
Oh. Okay. I sort of thought.
I don't even know. I mean, could they tack a year or two on, a year plus an option or something? I mean, maybe. But.
So you think Jerry Jones is still in exploratory fashion? I mean, he.
Why does he need to make that commitment to this? Like, where is Jason Garrett gone?
I mean, no. Where is he going? Jerry Jones said.
Yeah.
All right, well, let me ask you this, because I wrote about this today. He said Jason Garrett would have had five offers. I know that if he was a free agent right now.
Okay.
But I do think when you look at the teams, the Bengals, Cardinals, and Dolphins would have hired him, right? Maybe?
I guess, but would he be going there? Like, is that what he – you know what I'm saying? Like, takes two to tango. Like, if he got fired this year, I don't think he would have jumped to the head of the class. I don't think he'd be willing to do what Jim Caldwell's doing right now. Mm. And I think he would have taken Jerry's money for a year and then seen what would have happened.
Mm.
Because he wasn't going to Green Bay. He wouldn't be going to Cleveland. I don't see him in New York. Dan, I mean, were you Scott Linehan to work with Sam Bradford? Good luck with Sam Darnold. I keep wanting to call him Sam Bradford. So look. Will they do something to get people to stop talking about a lame duck year? Probably. Is he going to empower Jason? Look, dude, Jason Garrett doesn't control the fit. What does he control anyway? He doesn't even control his own staff. Like, I mean,
he didn't control his own hands.
But no, I mean, honestly, like, we've talked about this for years, okay? It's the path of least resistance for the owner to basically do as he wants unto the roster, unto the locker room, and unto the sidelines. They're very comfortable with that. So, no, he's not firing Jason after they just went to the playoffs. Will they eventually force the offensive coordinator out? If not before the season, then very early next season when they're a pedestrian vanilla offensive team again? Sure, that's probably coming at some point. Is Jason going to get a massive contract extension? I don't think so. Will they tack a year on and then maybe a fake year after that? Probably, because not many people in the NFL coach out lame duck years.
Right.
Although if I was John Harbaugh, I absolutely would.
Hmm. Okay. All right. That's interesting. I mean, I just sort of was treating it as, well, Jason won a bunch of games. He won the division, won a playoff game. Here's some money, Jason. Don't worry about it. Maybe not. I mean, do you think that Jerry Jones is going to spend the offseason making his players rich? Like giving Dak Prescott and Amari Cooper and Tank Lawrence all contracts?
Yes.
Okay. Cause all those guys all want a lot of money. Like Lawrence is going to come in.
One of them absolutely does. One of them did well enough in a short sample size to force their hand, given what they gave up for him. The other one, I would be playing that out, but he won't. I mean, Jerry won't. He'll pay
Dak. Right. Yeah.
So
And Lawrence is going to get $20 million plus a year.
Yeah, or you just franchise him again. Either way, I'm not letting him leave the building.
Right. Exactly. He's not going to hit true free agency. Okay.
No.
To the Saints and Rams, do you think? How do you think that play? What's your initial reaction? And by the way, what do you think is going to I mean, just who do you think wins, Chiefs or Patriots? Since I won't talk to you before the games.
Yeah, I'm leaning to the Patriots right now.
+3, that's a good lock.
Yeah, I'm taking the points as of right now. I'll be interested to see if that moves up or down, depending on weather or whatever other factors. You know, where how the money comes in. My hunch is like every America, you know what I mean? I guess square America was down on the Patriots last week, right?
Oh,
and buying the Chargers because of what the Chargers did to the Ravens.
Everybody was on the Chargers.
And
everybody.
So now the team that the squares were down on destroyed the team that the squares were up on. So wouldn't, like, my philosophy 101 tell me that New England getting points, that line, like, if I like New England, I'm getting my bet in early because there's going to be a lot of people probably betting New England getting points, and that line will change by Sunday?
You mean, in theory, won't the Patriots eventually be +2.5 instead of +3?
Or +2, yeah.
Yeah, probably. Because, and if you look at the line is juiced to the Patriots right now at 150. They might just leave it at 3. I wouldn't be surprised if they did that, mainly because,
it might just push.
Well, you want to be careful. You don't want to open yourself up to Chiefs -2.5, although they basically have because of the way that the juice is, like, you can buy the Chiefs to 2.5 at -120
right,
and deal with it. On the actionnetwork.com, the Patriots Chiefs is nearly twice as much bet. They're tracking like 11,300 bets versus 6,300 bets for the Rams and the Saints. 53% of the bets are on the Chiefs and 52% of the money is on the Chiefs. So it's a fairly even setup. Huh. And this, again, we're recording this on Tuesday afternoon. You know, these lines aren't going to move tremendously. So I don't think a lot of people have their, like, I don't think you've seen the big hitters go out there and lay their,
they haven't,
put
they haven't
their
weighed in yet.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So who would you lean? So what do you think about Saints Rams? I keep derailing it.
Yeah. I know. It's like we keep getting away from talking about this game.
That's fine. It's a rambling podcast.
I lean to the Saints. I do.
With the
they
points
better
too,
run the ball
just,
better than they
just,
did last week.
Just straight up.
You know, they're going to have to be more balanced. They can't have one of these sort of slumbering first halves on offense that they've been accustomed to. And the loss of Sheldon Rankins is significant. I mean, it is really, really big. And I'm sure Sean McVay will test the interior of that D-line right away in ways that he would not be nearly as aggressive doing if Rankins was in there plugging up things and getting in the face of his quarterback. But I do think the home field advantage is real. I do think you can get to Jared Goff and get him a little bit worried. And I think that Sean will go down swinging. You know what I mean? I think he'll tell Dennis Allen, empty it. You know, let's see what this kid's made of. Play the run on the way to the quarterback, and let's see if we can rattle this kid early. And they might be able to, you know?
Yeah.
They might be able to. That defense has gotten a lot better as the season's gone on. You know, I think that's the best defense left in the playoffs, I think, is the Saints defense.
That is, yeah, I would agree with that. And what I think is a huge help, too, that I think people are probably sleeping on a little bit, is they get to play the Rams. This is their second time playing the Rams. So and they beat them, of course, 45-35 in week 9 at home in a game that wasn't on primetime. It was I think, Fox game of the week. They were 7-1 and 8-1 at the time. Man, it was a great game. It was one of the best games of the year, sort of flying under the radar.
Beat the snot at them for a half, and then the Rams came running back in a way that the Saints didn't expect, and then they were able to put them away late.
Yep.
But
my point of that is, like, in that game, Todd Gurley had 13 carries for 68 yards and a touchdown. That's not you have the Saints who were able to slow down the rushing attack of the Rams, who have seen all the stuff. Like, the Cowboys didn't know what the hell they were doing against all the jet sweeps and the motions. And, I mean, like, their linebackers were perplexed, and the Rams were just opening up holes. Now, I think that the Rams' offensive line is good enough where it can open up holes against the Saints. And Sheldon Rankins, you're right, definitely hurts. But I think the experience of having seen that McVay offense is a big, big plus for the Saints.
Yeah, look, I think Sean McVay knows he's got to win this game with his running backs. I don't think Jared Goff's winning this game for him.
Jared Goff's never played on the road in the playoffs.
He's going to ask Jared Goff to manage the game. And I think, I wonder how much they become run pass. You know what I mean? Mm. Just because he's going to really know that if this quarterback, if it's third and six or more, we're in trouble. Mm. In this environment against this defense, it could be ugly.
Yeah.
Which, you know what I mean? I don't think is normally how Sean McVay would approach a game. But, you know, horses for courses and, you know, a 60-minute season, I just wonder how much of the approach is set up that way. It's going to be, I tend to think it's oddly low scoring, but I don't know.
Hmm. Yeah,
I don't think it's 35-45. That's for darn sure.
The over-unders in both these games is surprising because, like, the four teams combined for 161 points before the, you know,
right.
in their two regular season matchups. And, of course, the Chiefs and the Rams had even more points than that.
Yes.
And the over-under is 57 and 55. And the Saints-Rams opened up at 56, moved up quickly in 30 minutes to 57. Back when the first time they played – the over-under started at 60 and fell down to 57.5. I just think you're going to see, like you talk about with McVay, I don't think McVay is going to be in a hurry to score and give the ball back to Drew Brees in that offense.
I think the tempo that these teams play at is going to be closer to methodical than it is frenetic. You know, I think from both sides it's going to be a bit of a counterpunch kind of game and try to dictate things physically. I don't know, even with the fast track and perfect conditions, and it's always a good day to chuck the ball around in the dome. I think it comes down to the two running backs on both sides and who creates the more explosive plays, who breaks the most tackles. I think it's kind of a weirdly, oddly, maybe going to be a throwback game in that regard.
Mm, interesting. All right, let's talk. Let's take a quick break, and then we'll hit some news.
The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads ensure you can take on any adventure. Available H-Track all-wheel drive so you can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud. Standard third-row seating so your whole family can experience the thrill together. Available dual wireless charging pads so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead phone. Whether you're tailgating out in the dirt lot, Carter Finley, shout out Carter Finley, or whether you're whitewater rafting, taking the entire family on an adventurous trip, maybe you're out camping at Mount Rogers. I used to go as a kid, wish my parents had a Hyundai Santa Fe. The Hyundai Santa Fe is perfect for your family outing. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect for real.
All right, so Antonio Brown, still on the trading block, right, Jason? Still?
Well, I wouldn't even say he's really on the trading block yet because they're not. I mean, at this point, you've got a seven-month off season or whatever. I mean, God, what is this? January, February, March, April, May, June, July, August. We've got 7 months until they play a football game that matters. Right. So, I mean, I expect – I mean, the Steelers basically at this point, I mean, they've had – this is a weird offseason for them. They usually expect to still be playing football, you know what I mean, in the mid-January.
Yeah.
So they've had guys take vacations. They've pushed some of their personnel meetings back. They've got a little more time than normal. And now that their owner has basically sent the bat signal up, like, come and get this guy, you know, I think that it becomes a bit of a feeding frenzy at the combine. I think they leave Indianapolis with a pretty good idea of where he's going to go, or at least which three or four teams. There are going to be a lot of teams that are in it. You know what I mean? Well, what three or four teams are, like, in it,
right,
and seem super motivated and keep calling back and calling back and calling back, or, you know, meeting us in this hotel lobby or with this restaurant or whatever. So I think we're a month away from it, really. I don't think this is going to be like the Kirk Cousins deal, you know what I mean, where it was done at the Super Bowl. I don't think the Steelers are even really going to start pushing the issue until we get to the combine. At this point, you know what I mean, nobody's going to be in their building. You know, like, it's not like Antonio Brown's going to, you know, come in and mess up a Wednesday press conference or something. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
He's going to be down in Florida. It is what it is. Everybody said their piece. He can have the fun he wants to have on social media, but I don't feel like this is something they feel like has to be resolved, you know, right now.
Yeah, and I mean, all right, okay, so like you said, they have time to work with it. His roster bonus isn't due until March. The combine,
right,
tons of time. I mean, do you think at this point, given what you've reported on, what Art Rooney has said, a trade is happening, barring just no one giving them anything good?
Oh, no, they're going to not. Like, they're going to trade. Like, if he's not traded, it's because
they patch things up.
He sends a love letter to ownership. He has a crisis of conscience or whatever and calls up Art Rooney or flies to Pittsburgh and shows up at his front door, you know what I mean, head in hand, and says, I messed this up, man, but I think we can put it back together. And, you know, he starts calling Ben and, you know, calling Tomlin and being contrite, like doing a lot of things that don't seem reasonable or feasible at this point. But that's what it would take. Short of something like that happening, then, you know, they let it be known at the combine, we want, you know, at least the equivalent of a first-round pick for him. And it might be, you know, a pick and two players or two high picks or whatever. You know, we'll see what the market will bear. And I think it could be. I mean, all the guy does there, look, I understand he's a headache, yada, yada, yada. Not a great teammate, but you know how it is. Guys need to change the scenery sometimes. I'm not condoning anything he's done. I've documented it since training camp. It's troublesome, but maybe a different locker room and a different culture and a different type of discipline will bring out the best in him. For, you know, an average of, what, 12 touchdowns a year and over 100 catches a year and 1,400 yards is a down year. I know he's going to be 31, but he's a physical specimen. He doesn't show any signs of slowing down, and I can rent them at $13 million a year for 3 years, pay as you go, with no guarantees and no balloon payments and no cap ramifications. Who doesn't want that? Who couldn't use that?
I mean, I think the obvious comparison, if I went back and tried to find a good one in history, and the only one that really comes close is maybe the Randy Moss thing, because of the contract he had, because of his status, because of the reasons he ticked people off. But I think Moss is a different animal psychologically. Like, he got to Oakland, he's like, man, this sucks. I'm out. But like, if
he checked out on Sunday too. Like, this guy checks out in the middle of the week, like literally checks out, but then wants to come and ball on Sunday, you know, and even wanted to in week 17.
Yeah.
And they finally had enough. Like,
and with Antonio Brown too, I think if he goes, and Ryan Clark alluded to this, you know, I mean, everybody, I mean, like, Antonio Brown likes Antonio Brown. That's fine. I mean, you know, he likes who he, I don't think Antonio Brown would be upset if he went, 4-12 and caught 130 passes for 1,500 yards and was considered the best receiver in football on a bad team. Like, I think he'd be fine with that.
No, I don't think he's not going to end up on a bad team because he's 31.
Right, like, right.
If you're giving up what it takes to get Antonio Brown, you think you're a player away.
Yeah. So who would make sense?
The worst, quote unquote, air cap worst teams would be, to me, like
San Francisco,
the 49ers. You know what I mean? Or the Packers. Or, I mean, you can make a case with him on any team. I mean, most any team. I mean, you just could.
Where would you trade him if you were the Steelers?
Whoever gives me the most. I mean, I'm not trading him to Baltimore, Cleveland,
right?
Or
maybe Cincinnati.
New England.
I'll trade him to Cincinnati, but not New England. Yeah.
Or Cincinnati, but I'm maybe throwing Cincinnati in there because I just don't.
Right.
It's not really what they do. Right. But yeah, I mean, he would make it. Obviously, you start thinking about where would he make a lot of sense. Cleveland, Baltimore, and New England spring to mind immediately. That's not happening.
Yeah,
I think he ends up in the NFC. I think all things being equal, unless some AFC team really knocks their socks off. I think you look at the Eagles. I think you look at the Seahawks. I think you look at the 49ers. I think you look at the Packers. I mean, and then beyond that, I mean, who don't you look at? You know what I mean? Like, okay, I don't think the Giants will put him together with Odell. You know what I mean? Like, okay, they're not going to pay two receivers that much. Like, I don't think Dallas is doing it after just trading a one for Amari Cooper. So, like, okay, I'll scratch them off the list. But, like, could Washington use them? You know what I mean? Do they need to give their fans some reason to show up? Like, I mean, it's 13 million. For the position, the contract has become a bargain. And he's not in a position to demand a new contract because he bailed on his team 3 times last year.
Right.
Nobody's stuffing his pockets with anything additional right now. So,
show up, produce, and maybe you get paid later.
Who doesn't he make sense for in the NFC?
Yeah.
You know, like, who doesn't? Like, could Detroit use him? Sure. Like, could Chicago use him? Yeah. Like, you know, just start going through the teams. Green Bay? Sure. You know, out west, Arizona, I mean, they won 3 games. I don't think they're going to trade future ones when they need all these other positions. So I'll rule them out. But, like, the rest of the division, I mean, I don't think the Rams do it after making the trades they've already made for receivers. But, like, would it shock you if they were in it, picking as low as they are?
No.
Like, I wouldn't be shocked if the Rams were in it at all.
No, it wouldn't be surprising at all. I mean, they lost Cooper Kupp.
They've been flipping wide receivers out left and right. Like,
yeah,
you know, just go through the divisions. I mean, Bruce Arians is trying to win right now. I know they're paying Mike Evans a lot of money, but, like, you don't think B.A. would want to throw this? Okay, well, Deshaun's out and Antonio Brown's in. I mean, B.A. coming from Pittsburgh and everything.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I would think they would be really interested. Like, could Carolina use him? I don't know if he's a culture fit or whatever, but, like,
it's not.
You know, you throw him out there with DJ Moore, and you know what I mean? You trade out whatever, Funchess, and bring this guy in.
Cam,
like,
Newton,
sure.
Cam,
you know?
Newton, DJ
Atlanta,
Moore.
Atlanta, probably not. Like, they've got other fish to fry. But, like, Sean Payton, I wouldn't rule them out at all. He was trying to get a receiver all year. Wanted Emmanuel Sanders. I mean, dude, could you imagine Michael Thomas and Antonio Brown?
No, that'd be terrifying.
You've got Thomas cheap for one more year and Brown at 13. I mean, here's the other thing about Brown. It's a completely tradable contract. So as long as you don't give up, like, if you give up a one for him and you only keep him 2 years and you flip him for a 3 2 years later and you win a Super Bowl in between.
You don't blink.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the whole thing is there's nothing to preclude you. If it doesn't work out, okay, well, maybe we traded a higher, you know, maybe we wish we didn't trade a one for him, and we did, and he wore out his welcome in 18 months, but you probably won a bunch of football games and you know, had a high-flying offense while he was there, and you can always flip him on to somebody else.
Yeah. All right, let me ask you really quickly, we'll get out of here. Kyler Murray, where is he going to play, football or baseball?
I think it's football. I think it's football. We had him in studio right after he won the Heisman, and just watching him interact with the guys and off camera, you know, talking to him a little bit and talking to Sims and Cowher and those guys. He had a lot of chances to convince a lot of people that he wasn't still scratching a significant football itch, and none of us came away thinking he had played his last football game. And then just watching how Boris tried to manage the situation and how quickly he had to backtrack. And then, you know, everything that's happened continues to me to point to that, you know, and then I'm talking to my buddy Ken Rosenthal and I'm like, can you get an actual copy of the contract? And it turns out he only has to pay $1.1 million back because that's all he's been paid. You know, everybody's talking about $4.6 million. Well, the first installment was $1.1 million. The second installment's like another $1.1 million that comes in late March. If he's already bailed by then, he's not going to get that money, you know? So he's got to pay him $1 million back. But if you're a starting quarterback in the NFL, I mean, between just your marketing guarantees and, you know what I mean, your local, you know, your local commercials, and in his case, as a Heisman winner, maybe a couple national commercials, you've made that money back immediately. You're not making that money riding the bus in frickin' Bakersfield and Modesto and, you know what I mean, wherever the hell else, in Tucson, wherever the hell else the A's other affiliates are. So, you know, I think he's going to go to the combine, and I think the A's are going to have to deal with it. And if things go well at the combine and he looks like he's going to be a first-round pick, I would think he's going to throw at a pro day and work out for a few teams. And I mean, I think he goes in the first round, if nothing else. I mean, like let's say New England wins the Super Bowl. New England, and even if Brady stays, or New England makes the Super Bowl and loses, whatever. Like, might they take him at 32 or 31 or wherever they're picking?
Mm-hmm. Yes, entirely possible. I mean, yeah, sure, why not?
I mean, they really like Lamar, you know what I mean? And if Sony Michel wasn't there, they might have taken Lamar, but they looked, you know, they thought he was somebody who would help them win a Super Bowl right away, and you know what? They might be right.
Yeah.
But another year older of Brady, and Brady not being quite the MVP this year that he was last year, I mean, who's to say they wouldn't do it? So I think the kid goes to the first 32 picks because you can control him for 5 years, you know, with the fifth-year option and all that. It just makes sense for people to continue to be trading between 28 and 32 for a quarterback. I think that's, you know, it's going to happen quite a bit. Maybe he goes high. Maybe he likes the combine up, and maybe he goes higher than that. But I think you got a chance to be a first-round quarterback.
And get 20 – you can get $20 million guaranteed. Well, probably topping out at $18 million.
No, but if he goes where Lamar went, he's going to make
$10 million
like
yeah.
$9 million guaranteed, and you know $6 million up front.
Bunch of endorsement
and it's
deals.
It's really going to be more than $9 million, but you know what I mean. The full true guarantee at signing will be between 9 and 10.
Yeah.
It's already more than baseball with the chance to start earning right away because you're playing in the big leagues right away.
Yep. What? All right, I'll get you out of here on this. Give me one word to describe Adam Gase's press conference. I'll start. Meth.
Come on.
Gas station speed. No, I'm just kidding.
Can you say that? You can't say that.
Can I? Gas station speed? I can say that. I can say whatever. I don't think he was on gas station speed. I think he probably drank a bunch of coffee before he went up there. That's all that happened.
I'll say memorable. I'll go with memorable.
I'll say, how about a different word? I'll go eyeful. What was happening up there? I mean, what was going on? That was wild. I like Gase. I think he'll be a good coach, but you can't, like, optics matter in the NFL and in life in 2018, and you can't do that when you get on the stage for the Jets press conference. He's going to get in a fight with, like, Manish Mehta at some point in the regular season next year.
Yeah, I mean, it could be Greg Williams. It could be a long one.
Yeah, so Greg. Yeah, I think Greg Williams. It sounds like Greg Williams is going to be the DC there, right?
It's very close. As we're talking, it's very likely. I don't think he's going to make that trip to Washington. I think he's going to end up sticking with the Jets here. But again, that could be a little bit dated by the time this comes out. But yeah, look, I've always said I thought Adam on his second head coaching job would have a chance to be really special, and we're going to find out. He's got the quarterback. He's got some receivers, and he's got some speed, and you saw what he did, you know, with Albert Wilson and some of these guys in Miami without a real quarterback. So I think he's got some pieces to play with, and New England can't do this forever, right? So, yeah, I think he's got a chance to make it work. I think Adam's very bright, very driven. I think he's got an absolute chance to be a winning head coach in New York, and I think very highly of his abilities. And, you know, we're going to find out. Like, that's a team that's going to be expected to start making strides next year. And not just on offense, but both sides of the ball. So we'll see the totality of the staff that he brings in. They obviously have a lot of money they want to spend in free agency. I've spent a couple days this week looking over this free agent class time and time again. Good luck spending it.
It's not great, Bob.
Oh, every year it gets worse. I mean, every year.
That's just the nature of the CBA.
It gets markedly worse. Yeah. And, you know, once you got the franchise tag factored in and, you know, the four or five guys who end up signing mega extensions before the market with their regular, you know, with their current teams, it's just going to be slim pickings. But we'll see. I'm sure they'll be trying to be creative with trades and stuff like that. I mean, I give the Jets a lot of credit for that. It didn't work out, and they made the Bridgewater trade, which was a smart signing for them. But, you know, they were trying to trade for Fowler before the season started. They were trying to trade for, you know, different guys at different times who they thought could give them some pass rush, and it may require a trade or just blowing it out for Dee Ford if he doesn't get tagged, which I could see them doing.
All right. It's Jason LaCanfora, the one, the only. Follow him on Twitter at Jason LaCanfora. Watch him on the NFL Today. Nice and warm in the studio next week.
The kickoff. They do keep that studio a little chilly, but definitely I will take that over the sidelines at Arrowhead, yes.
All right, buddy. We'll talk to you next week.
All right. Sounds good, bud. Thank you.